Welcome to Long Story Long. I'm your host, Lisa Curry. Today's guest is the insanely talented guitarist, Monty Pittman. Monty is a former member of the band Prong, and he currently plays for the one and only Madonna. Let's do this. Hey, Monty, how are you? Thanks for coming on today.
Hello, I'm good. So I'm doing really good. It's great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. 2 seconds ago, you were just telling me you were a professional clapper.
Yes. That's how I got my start. That's how my career started.
Wait, I love that. What song was this?
It's on the song Spanish Lesson.
Oh, okay.
It's on Madonna's Hard Candy album.
Okay, all right. Was this a difficult gig to book?
Well, I was playing guitar on the song, and then I said, "What if we did like a 10-minute intro of just me clapping?" And they didn't like that idea, but I did get to that's me clapping on the album.
I love that. Is that double residuals or?
I made it's the most money that I've ever made. I'm gonna put out a solo album where I'm just clapping.
That is really fun. It's people. There's where am I going with this thought? When I got into writing, people would tell me like, "Oh, if you ever write on a sitcom, try to write a jingle or a song because then you get extra residuals for the music." And that's what made me think of that as like, it would be hilarious if you got like double the money because you also clapped in addition to playing guitar.
Well, maybe that'll be. I mean, maybe that's like something that's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
I think the future of music is going to involve a lot of clapping.
Probably it'll be clapping and grunting and nothing else.
That was being serious. I was very excited about that I was clapping on a record. But who knows? They may have had someone come and replace my claps after, and I'll never know.
Like a session clapper.
Yeah, you hear about the session guitar players in the 70s. Like the band was too drunk or too high in the studio, and someone came and re-recorded their parts. There could be somebody who came in and clapped over my claps. But
yeah.
I'm just going to go with that it's me.
Yeah, yeah. It'll help you sleep at night, if nothing else.
Yeah.
You're not on tour right now, obviously.
No.
With COVID happening. But what are you working on now? What's the latest?
Right now I teach online, just like this. You know, I teach guitar lessons online, and that's it. That's all I'm doing.
Oh, wow. Do you love it, or is it?
I do.
I have like wanted to sign up, and then I get too nervous. I'm like, I can't do that.
No, there's nothing to be nervous about. I've specialized with beginners.
Yeah.
I've had people say, "Well, I'd like to take lessons from you, but I'm a beginner. Like,
yeah.
I just want to teach Yngwie Malmsteen, you know?"
Right.
No, it's actually, I would prefer to be the person that starts you off.
Yeah, that's awesome. I keep deluding myself into thinking I'm going to teach myself, and then I will sit down with a guitar for maybe 10 minutes, and I get so frustrated. I'm like, fuck this. I'm not going to do it. I don't care anymore. It's just
See,
a cycle.
You need someone to guide you through
it. Yeah,
like, totally. just like anything that you were learning, there's lessons and stuff that people put on YouTube and people get books and all that, and people have said to me like, why don't you put up videos on YouTube? But you need that interaction, from one person to another.
Yeah,
because I may say, you put your finger here and you do this, but you may not understand. Sometimes I'll tell somebody, put your second finger on this fret, and they think that's your second finger because they used to play piano.
Oh, yeah.
So if I made a video saying that, that could be confusing for people.
Right, totally.
So it's good to have that just one-on-one interaction, or someone maybe playing something that you just you correct them.
Yeah.
But that's what I do. I teach online, and I have people all over the planet.
Yeah.
So that's been a great blessing, like something I'm so thankful for. That I can do, because you couldn't really do this until a few years ago.
To be able to do everything online.
Yeah, where it really worked. Like you could have like a Skype lesson or something like that. Like within the last 5 years is when it really works, because before that, you know, the video would freeze up.
Yeah. It is really incredible how artists are able to take more control of our own careers because of the internet. Like, I don't, I just recorded my first comedy album and I did that myself. You have several albums, which are great, by the way. For anyone listening, get
his albums.
And you didn't produce those yourself, though, right? Those are all through Metal Blade?
Well, Metal Blade is the record label that, that put it out. I did produce the last two albums. I did everything on them. I'm not going to do that again for the next album.
it's a fucking lot of work.
It is. And that worked for the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the timeline, that's what needed to happen. But, you know, next time it needs... I want to always do something kind of different.
Yeah.
The first album that I did was just acoustic guitar and vocals.
Mm-hmm. And then
I did, because that's what I thought I was going to do, is just like acoustic stuff. Because I mean, at the time I didn't realize that I had just finished playing in Prong, but I had been playing in Prong. And so that kind of took over the heavy side of what I was doing. So if I wrote something heavy, I would submit it as a Prong song. So, you know, the first album was just acoustic guitar and vocals, and I could recreate what I was doing anywhere.
Yeah.
If you have to have a drummer, what if your drummer's not available? What if your singer's not available?
Right.
I had the most amazing singer for this band that I started, and then he went on American Idol, and now he's the singer for Queen.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
you're not going to replace that. You know?
You're not going to be like, hey, come back. Listen, Queen is Queen.
You know, yeah.
Fuck them. Why are you going to play music with Brian May? Ew.
Yeah, are you you filming the show this week? You want to go play at the Cat Club? You know? I can get us on at 8:15, do a 30-minute set.
Or somewhere that's like pay to play.
Oh, no sound check. No sound check. No. And then from when I was playing live, more and more people would come out to see me. And so then I had to have a band, and I started playing with people. And then the next album I made, I did make a heavy album, and that's what got me signed to Metal Blade.
What made you make the shift from doing your own acoustic album to doing a heavy album?
At the time, I thought, well, maybe I would just do an acoustic album, just, you know, kind of to do it, and then take it from there.
Uh-huh.
And then the second album is kind of a hybrid. Like, I could play all those songs acoustically, but I could also play them with a band. And so it's almost like a death and a rebirth. Which is a theme in my life. I'm a Scorpio, and that's like what kind of defines us, you know. When you think something is over in your life, you know, it's just because something new is starting at the same time.
Yeah.
And so after I put out both of those albums, then I wanted to do, it all came down to Fleming Rasmussen. That's the producer.
Okay.
And so I was going to work with him, and I gave him all my music of what I was writing, which is kind of all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of like that. My moon is in Gemini. I can't ever make up my mind. There's all my astrology.
I love that you know all this stuff, because I'm like, I'm a Scorpio.
Yeah.
I think that just means I'm a bitch.
No. See, Scorpios are the most loyal, the best lovers. You know.
Yeah.
We got to take that one. When they say that about you, you go, oh yeah.
Yeah,
totally. Oh, don't you know? Yeah. Actually, I don't like jealousy. They say jealousy is a big thing, like Scorpios get jealous.
Yeah.
And that can be a thing, but it's more like I don't like that. Scorpios don't like someone, I wouldn't like someone telling my secrets that I told.
Right.
If I told you something and said, don't tell anybody, and then you went and told somebody, that's like never talk to you again kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So when I hear people tell these stories, I'm just like, oh, yeah, well, it makes sense.
Totally.
But not to get off topic. So Fleming Rasmussen was going to do my next album. He did Metallica's classic album. He did Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, and Injustice for All. And so just being able to work with him was amazing. So I gave him all these songs, and he goes, look, he goes, this is all great. He goes, I want to record your heavy songs. That's what I think you're really, really good at.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I need somebody to tell me that. And so I made this heavy album, and as luck would have it, Brian Slagle lived like within a mile from me.
Oh, wow.
And we were going to just get together. Actually, Rachel Fine. You know Rachel?
It sounds familiar, and I'm forgetting who that is.
She connected us on Twitter.
Okay.
And then we were like, hey, well, I'm on tour. When I get home, let's go grab dinner or something. And so we did, and I was like, hey, I just recorded this album with Fleming Rasmussen. Because he helped, you know, Brian, you know, is, you know, one of the people that discovered, you know, if not the person that discovered Metallica from the from day one. And so I said, hey, Fleming did my album. You got to hear it. And I was like, what should I do? What do I do with this? You know, and thinking that I just thought that Metal Blade, like, that it wasn't, I would just always think of myself as like, it's not heavy enough for Metal Blade, but he's like, I'll take it. I'll put it out. So,
yeah.
And I'm like, that's it. That's what it's like getting signed. It's that.
It is funny how something like you could just say something offhand and it just takes off. I mean, I've certainly had that in my career where I'm like, you know, I've always wanted to do such and such thing. And then somebody's like, oh, well, then let's just make that happen.
You think like balloons are going to fall from the ceiling.
Yeah, you definitely feel like there must be like a big application process or something. Like, are you going to run my credit or what's going on here?
That's good that he didn't run my credit before. You know, I like this song, but let's see your credit score first.
Can you imagine if that was the process?
Yeah. So, and then I put out my next album. Mm-hmm. Jay Rustin produced it.
Oh, yeah, I know Jay.
Richard Christie from the Howard Stern Show played drums.
Awesome.
And Billy Sheehan played bass on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the albums after that, then I had all this heavy stuff, and I'm like, well, people like the acoustic stuff, and people like the heavy stuff. So I did two albums. I put out two albums in one day.
What?
Well, there's one album that's acoustic and one album that's heavy.
The same material?
No. Two different things.
Oh, okay.
So it seemed like a great idea, but because you know I like doing both.
Yeah.
And people act like it's so far apart from each other, but there's a lot of bands that do that. Yeah. I saw that the singer of Machine Head was posting a lot of acoustic stuff, but then Machine Head's a really heavy band.
Yeah.
I kind of always look at Led Zeppelin as the template.
Totally. Because they're all over the place.
Yeah, right. Like,
and
if
that's
you look
what
at
I love about them.
The first Led Zeppelin album, the first song is a rock song, which was heavy metal. You know, that was so heavy at the time.
Yeah.
The second song is acoustic. The third song is a blues song. The fourth song is like a trippy psychedelic song.
Yeah.
So I like to kind of use that template with things that I do, because who knows where music is going to go. It's kind of like all bets are off again. So that's how all that happened with the album. So the next album will definitely be with a producer, and the band will like play in the studio. I'm going to take my time on it. And
is that something you're working on right now, actively?
Yeah, I have been for a couple of years, but I'm not even going to start, when it comes time to record, I want to have everything, like, where we could just, like, we've been on tour playing the songs. That was originally what I wanted to do, which is not really feasible. But I thought, wouldn't it be great to go on tour, book a tour? Like, let's say you're going to record in Nashville, okay? So you start your tour, and you go to Nashville, and you play little dive bars. Like, play the smallest, crappiest places that you can, which are sometimes the most fun, and just play the new album.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so fun.
And then when you go into the studio, you've worked out all the kinks, like, in a real situation.
Yeah. I mean, that's the same thing I do, essentially, with comedy. It's like, you just go and you work on the set again and again and again. And I think people don't realize that when you're on a tour leading up to recording it for an album, you're working everything still, and things aren't going to be the same. You know, you're still figuring out what works and what doesn't. I can't wait to hear whenever you finally get it.
Hold your breath. It will not be any time soon. For me, next time I put out an album needs to be when I can go on tour and promote it.
Yeah.
I've always been to where, like, you know, I'll put out an album and then another Madonna tour comes up, and so I kind of have to put everything on hold. Or, you know, it used to be like in the 2000s as I would go from Prong to Madonna, and it's like once one ended, then the next one would start. But now doing my own stuff, you know, it takes time to get everything built up, but then if Madonna does something again, then I have that everything. You have to put everything kind of on hold.
That has to be so fun and creatively satisfying to, like, to be able to go from Prong to your own stuff to Madonna, because it's different. And I think that a lot of times people think of artists as, like, one thing, but we're dynamic people, as anyone is. So it's like your tastes are across the board, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, the stuff that I have written, I've got heavy stuff, I've got acoustic stuff, I've got some blues stuff that I've been working on that is really interesting because it's not like anything that I've ever heard before. So I don't know if, I kind of don't know what to do with it yet. And it's not time to know what to do with it. Like whenever the time is right, like it'll naturally kind of happen. The writing process of it is what's fun.
Yeah.
It's like once you have a song and you know it, then you learn it and your mind is already going to what's the next thing I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So it's like I want to just sort of simmer on all of this.
Do you find that it's harder to write things when things are going really well? I mean, I know as a comic that feels more difficult for me.
The I guess you could say the worst times that I've had is the stuff that I like the most for what I had written.
Yeah.
And, you know, the times that I've, you know, like the happiest kind of times, I'm not interested in what I was writing then. Because it's emotional what you're going through.
And so that's the tension and the anguish and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I imagine as hard as it is to write this comedy when I'm like in a great mood, it feels like metal would be so much more difficult, because what are you going to be like, my kids are fucking beautiful, like, you know, like, what can you do with that?
Yeah, lyrics right now are really hard for me. Lyrics have always been hard for me, but, and people will ask, like when you do interviews or when you have an album come out, they'll say, well, what's this song about? And I don't write lyrics like that. I wish I could. Like, you mentioned writing jingles. That's not, you know, that's just not me. That's not what I listen to. That's not what I emotionally connect with. Which a lot of the stuff that I write is kind of weird. There's some sort of like musical theory sort of thing behind it all. Like, okay, these chords shouldn't work this way, so I'm going to make them work. And then you got to play around each of those chords. It's like a jazz way of thinking, but with metal, but all dark sort of chords.
Yeah.
Kind of like how you would write the score for a horror movie, in a way.
Okay.
That kind of stuff. Yeah.
All right. Just like the mood first.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, I'll play guitar, and then I just start playing something, and then that's how you write. And then from there, you kind of just like, kind of like sing to yourself what works, like with a melody or something, while you're playing. And that will dictate what the words will follow the melody.
Okay.
Because I have to play guitar and sing. And so if I were to come up with a melody on its own, that may be something that's not so easy to play guitar and sing at the same time. So if I can't play that song live, what's the point?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, because you're not going to lip sync.
Yeah, and from doing the different kinds of music, from doing acoustic stuff, doing heavy stuff, when the last two albums, Between the Space and Better or Worse, when they came out, I went on tour opening for Sebastian Bach. And that really, and then I really saw where everything works. Like the more like progressive kind of stuff, like in odd time signatures, or you're doing something, you know, like technical on the guitar, went over really well. When I would just play like a song, it didn't do as well. But then I stopped, and in the middle I would do an acoustic song, and then like that kind of like brings everybody's attention in, because they're hearing all this, you know, hard, you know, like this, you know, rock music, but then you do something acoustic and it brings everybody's ears in.
Yeah, I think you do. That is a big part of performing live.
Yes.
Is kind of orchestrating people's emotions, because you can't be at a 10 with everything again and again and again, because it's like it's exhausting emotionally, I think, for the audience to come along on that ride.
Yeah, it is.
And that's so cool to be able to open for somebody else and figure stuff out. I feel like that takes a lot of the pressure off, at least for me. If I'm opening for somebody else, I'm like, I could kind of fuck around more. These people don't, and not like I don't care about the material, but they're not expecting something, you know, because they're not here to see me. They're here to see the next comic.
Right.
Or at least
yeah, I know what
you
mean. And you learn from who you open for, like,
oh,
to,
totally.
You know, so after Sebastian, I opened for Tony McAlpine.
Okay.
Do you know who that is? He's a,
not a clue.
He's a guitar shredder guy, you know, open a singer and then a guitar guy. And then I had Madonna, and now we have what we have now.
What's your process like with Madonna? Are you writing the chords and stuff, or is she like, hey, I want it to sound like this, make that happen?
There's been a couple of times where we have written stuff, but it's you know, like, as far, you never know what it's going to be.
Yeah.
There's a song that we wrote that was something that, a chord progression that I gave her for guitar lessons when I started teaching her how to play guitar. And then from her learning that, then she, you know, came up with a song for it. So then we had a collaboration. There's one of the oddest, well, there's two stories that are kind of similar, and I've heard this with other guitar, I heard this with Steve Lukather talking about playing on Lionel Richie's album. And he, like, heard the song. They're like, okay, here's the song. And he's, like, learning it. And, like, maybe they played it one more time. And they're like, okay, great. And he's like, wait, I don't even know this. I'm still learning the song. They're like, yeah, but what you played was fine.
Yeah.
But there's a song, Like It or Not, that's the last song on the Confessions on a Dance Floor album.
Okay.
And Madonna had one more day in the studio. It was, like, the last day in the studio. She said, hey, this is the last song. I want you to come up with something to play on it.
Mm-hmm.
Here, listen to it. I'll be right back. And so I came up with this sort of idea, and it, I'll show you, see if you can hear it. It goes. Right?
Yeah,
and then
that's awesome.
She comes back, and I go, what about something kind of like this? She goes, oh, yeah, that's great. All right, go lay it down. I'm like, oh, that's it? So then I recorded it.
You're expecting balloons coming from the ceiling.
Yeah, exactly. and then you know, I recorded it, and then Stuart, the guy who was producing it, at the end, when I played, and I just kept playing at the end, and he goes, well, that's the album. I was like, that was it? Like, and then there was a song, the same song that I did my clapping debut, called Spanish Lesson, and Pharrell produced that, and I had just flown to London, and I was, like, jet-lagged, exhausted, and I was tuning Madonna's guitar tuning her guitar there in the studio, and I just went, wait, what is it? It's been a long time, but I wasn't even thinking about it, and he goes, what was that? I'm like, what was what? It's like, what did you just do? I said, I was just tuning the guitar. He's like, whatever you just did, go in there, lay that down. I was like, oh, okay, all right.
It's so funny, because it's like, and I'm sure that you, at this point, I mean, you've been with Madonna for ages, so I'm sure you're not feeling as much pressure anymore. But it's like, sometimes we make the best stuff when you just don't even realize that anyone could be watching or listening or giving a shit, because it's
you never know.
You're just fucking off. Yeah. But truly, you never know. It is funny to see, like, what sticks with people.
Yeah. And that's, you never know what it's going to be. I always say it's bad luck to turn down a gig.
Yeah.
You may take a job playing for somebody that, you're like, oh, I don't know about this, and then just it leads to something, or you have a great situation. One of my favorite gigs I've ever had was with, there's this group, Carmen, with a K, K-A-R-M-I-N. And my friend Janine was their tour manager, and she said, "Hey, my friends are looking for a guitar player. They have a pop duo. It's really, 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 really poppy, but I think you guys would get along so well. Would you meet them and talk to them about maybe playing some shows with them?"
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I listen to it and I go, "Oh wow, that is really poppy." Yeah. And I was like, "Well, yeah, let's meet them." So just one phone call with them, I was like, "Oh, I'm going to play with them just because they're so cool." And we met, and it was, it's one of my favorite gigs that I've ever done. If I could just play with them, I would just do that. But
really?
Yeah.
I do feel like that's also, I guess, a misconception a lot of people have is they think, like, and a misconception I had when I started out, I thought, like, you know, artists work with other artists that have the exact same taste as them, or they do the exact same thing. And it's like, it's really the most satisfying work is working with people that you really get along with and you have fun with and you can collaborate with.
Yeah,
like, that's the most important.
Yeah, and this group was very like, "Hey, do whatever you want to do. That's the way we did the song in the studio. But live, you know, if you want to just start playing a lead and start playing a solo, go for it. And, you know, dirty it up a little. Put some distortion on there." I'm like, "Really? Okay." And they were just so cool. Just brilliant, brilliant musicians. So
that's awesome.
I like situations like that where you may think that maybe you're not going to get along or you're so different musically. But at the end of the day, a lot of people are not like that. I have a friend who works with a lot of the big rappers.
Mm-hmm.
And he was asking me a music theory question, and I won't get into that because I won't bore you.
Okay.
But it's how the 5 chord resolves to the 1 chord and what you can play over the 5 chord. You play a dominant chord. And we were talking about all this music theory stuff. And he's like, "Oh my God, you just cracked the code. We've been trying to figure this out of what you do." I said, "What do you mean?" He's like, he's talking about the rappers that he's working with. And these are some of the top, the biggest names in that kind of music. And he said, they'll just sit around and look up YouTube videos of this complicated music theory to learn stuff. So everything is sort of shifting where there's a group of musicians that and people that you would think don't care anything about that, that are learning all of this crazy music theory stuff and applying it to what they do. So,
well, I think also, I mean, anyone that's doing well in their genre, whatever it is, you have to have some sort of a knowledge of things outside of yourself. I don't think that I don't know if anyone's like brilliant and everything's just coming from their own mind. You know, I think there has to be, I don't want to say borrowing, but like you have to understand how other things work and how all the pieces come together for you to do your own job properly.
Yeah.
Very well.
Yeah, I just realized something last night that Eddie Van Halen, rest in peace, was doing something I've been doing on guitar. I didn't even realize that came from him.
You know, that's awesome.
There's times you're influenced from something and you don't even realize where it came from just because so many people will do a certain thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to learn, like, you know, from guitar lesson, from me being a teacher, of course, you know, that's something to revisit right now, you know, because of the situation. And, you know, and I stress to my students, like, I wouldn't learn all of Eddie Van Halen's songs if I were you. Because because what you're going to do, because you're going to find out, like, a lot of that stuff is not that complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so innovative. A lot of it is fairly simple to play. It's how he got there.
Yeah.
It's like you're eliminating this part, and you're eliminating this part, and it's what you're left with. It's that simplicity. Mm-hmm. The less is more. But if you start learning all of his stuff note for note, you're going to start playing everything you play is going to sound like Van Halen.
Yeah.
Which would be one of the worst things you could do.
Like, I love Van Halen so much, but like you want to be able to...
Well, you want to listen to Van Halen.
You want building blocks to be able to have a bigger range.
Right. You want to have your own identity. So you want to take the ideas of maybe how he was thinking about that.
Uh-huh.
And you want to be influenced by it. You don't want every song that you write, you don't want every solo you do to sound like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Every single one.
You want to know, like, oh, okay, he's doing these notes because that's an A minor chord. Well,
yeah.
If I played G major, I could do the same kind of idea, you know, that sort of thing.
It's also a very 80s sound. And I don't mean that as, like, a dig, but it's, like, obviously Van Halen is, like, synonymous with the 80s. So it's, like, everything will just sound weirdly nostalgic for some reason.
Well, yeah, a lot of it is the sound, the production that goes into it.
Yeah.
I mean, because when they first came out, that was 77 or 78, so they had it was like 70s and 80s. And,
yeah.
And they adapted with the times, which is another interesting point, you know, when they added keyboards and all that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know. To me, I'm like, they're the best part of the 80s. Like, it's everything that was good about the 80s, like, condensed into one band. I mean, I also, like, cried a lot when Eddie Van Halen died, and I think a lot of my friends thought I was ridiculous.
I just passed his house the other day, and I didn't realize it, because there's signs outside of his house. I'm not going to say where it is. Mm-hmm. But, I was like, wait, what are those Van Halen signs doing here? Are you telling me that I've been driving by here like three times a week for 5 years? And that's, you know, I may have stopped and thrown something away in his trash can.
Yeah, I mean, at least.
I'm going to just say that I did. Did you ever meet Eddie Van Halen? No, I didn't, but I threw some trash away in his trash can.
Which, by the way, people in the Midwest would go crazy over that. They'd be like, oh, I mean, whatever, that sounds like it's an insult. I don't mean that to sound insulting, but people get really impressed by just the most tangential celebrity anything.
Right, yeah.
Which is very funny to me. Kind of speaking of which, the last time I saw you in person, we hung out, was in New York, and you were working with Madonna then.
Yep.
And that was for the last tour. You guys were doing rehearsals, right?
Yeah, we were in rehearsals then for the Madam X tour.
That's awesome. How was that?
It was different. You know, it was a different kind of tour. It was a theater tour.
Mm-hmm.
We would stay in a city for a 3 weeks.
Oh yeah.
Or maybe like a month. I don't know. So that was really cool. And in some of the cities, the hotel was close by. So if you had a break for a couple hours, you can go back to your room, or you can like walk back to your hotel after the show. That was cool. It was a cool tour. It was, they've all had their, I get asked like, what was your favorite tour? What was your favorite Madonna tour? And it's hard to pick one. They all have something that was, that stands out, and it's hard to just choose one.
Well, and because she's so good at transforming things that, you know, I imagine that keeps it interesting at the very least, where it's like, well, at least you're not doing the same exact thing over and over again, you know?
Yeah, and this, for the majority of it, since it's a theater tour, we played behind the curtain, so we're backstage playing. And so the last half of the show, I don't even have to go out. So once I change, you know, we have costume changes and stuff like that. So when I change, I'm back in my regular clothes for the last part of the show. Which
so
is,
nice. And so I can comfy.
If I had a break, you know, in between sometimes there's a song you don't play on, I could just like go on my phone and
just kind of fuck off.
You're like writing back, you know, answering emails and paying bills. And
yeah, and people are like, what are you up to? And you're like, just backstage.
Just playing with
Madonna, but it's like a down minute.
I'll be writing here. Hang on, got to play Like a Prayer real quick. I'll be back in 5 minutes. They're like, what? Are you're not writing me on the stage, are you? Yeah. I am writing you on the stage. What? Oh, my God. And someone... No one can see that you're writing me. No one can see my text coming. Like, no, I'm behind the curtain.
Yeah. Just imagine, like, that's part of the show. Maybe that should be part of the next tour. Madonna just takes all of your guys' text messages, and that's played There's just songs.
That's the screen.
There's just songs and background music, and the crowd's just confused. They're like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah. It's your bank statement pops up, your credit score for some reason.
Yeah, my credit score when it's time to give Brian Slagle or Tracy Vera a new album. Like, when I send it to Metal Blade, like, hey, I got a new album. Here's my credit score.
Yeah, that's so funny.
My Equifax.
Yeah, and that's how, I mean, we met at a Metal Blade thing. Was it a Christmas party or something years ago? I don't know.
Metal Blade Christmas party is a little foggy to me, so that's possible.
Yeah, I'm like, I have no idea.
I think we did. Or would we have gone to a game? Or,
maybe.
It was probably a Christmas party.
Yeah.
Kind of party. The best.
They're great, and there's so much more chill than I think my perception would have been. Like it never would have crossed my mind that Brian Slagle's just kind of like a little bit of a wine snob. He's very chill.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
super nice dude.
The greatest. He is.
Yeah. He's
You should get him on your show.
Yeah, I should have him on. Absolutely. Yeah. Really quick, when you were a kid and you were growing up, like, did you have all of this in mind? Were you like, one day I'm going to be touring with a huge pop star and I'm going to have my own albums? And
yeah, I wanted to play music ever since I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's since I was going back, you know, you can trace it back to me being 3 years old, standing on my sister's bed with a toy guitar with rubber bands, pretending I was Ace Frehley.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
When did you start playing real guitar?
When I was 13.
Like oh, wow. Whoa.
Yeah.
That's like...
That's how long it took me. I grew up in the Bible Belt.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, that devil music.
That's really fascinating because it's, you know, most people that I know of that are at your talent level are like, yeah, I started playing when I was 6 months old, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. Geraldo Rivera.
Yeah.
Geraldo Rivera, he single-handedly stopped me from getting a guitar because he would always have those specials that if your kids listen to Megadeth, they're going to become Satan-worshipping axe murderers. And
hilarious.
He had to pick the best albums.
Yeah.
Like, there's plenty of crap albums on there. He could have put, which have more, like, satanic covers than he could have put up on there. But, no, he chooses, like, Megadeth Peace Sells.
So, did your parents, like, really believe that shit? Were they like, oh, we can't?
They were just, you know, I mean, a lot of parents were then.
Yeah.
It was just sort of thrown. I mean, I'm sure they were just, I don't fault them for that. I understand now, and I'm glad my parents were really, like, strict, and I was really sheltered. Like, I couldn't go to concerts, nothing like that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you have to go to church every Sunday morning, mm-hmm. Sunday night, Wednesday night.
Oh, no. No.
The first gig I ever played, I was 14, and I just got the VHS tape mm-hmm. for it. I just eventually I'm going to put all this stuff up on my YouTube page. But 14, first show I've ever played, I had to miss sound check because I had to go to church.
Oh no.
So when I played, the band that we opened for were just not cool to us at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't let me, the guitar player wouldn't let me use my amp because he didn't want to move the microphone. Maybe it was kind of cool because he let me use his guitar.
Okay.
Which I'll take that as a nice gesture, mm-hmm. but it seemed like they were just not being cool to us. And so when I'm playing, I had to play a guitar that I'd never played before.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, everything felt differently. And the first song that we played was Am I Evil from Metallica. That's what we opened with.
And at this point, you've only been playing for a year anyway.
I'd only been playing guitar for a year, too.
Yeah.
So, and it's the first time playing in front of people.
Yeah.
And everything sounds different and all that. So that was one story. And then another one is when the youth minister, he tells me, he's like, hey, everybody, I'm going to be preaching tonight. Come and sit. I want you all to come sit up front. Monty, you
mm-hmm.
definitely, you got to come, you got to hear this. You got to come sit up front.
Oh, boy.
So I come in and I sit up front. I'm listening to him, trying not to fall asleep.
And he brings out Geraldo Rivera.
No. I'm so even worse. And he's talking about something, and he's looking at the congregation, and he says, "Yes, and like the doom and despair of heavy metal music." And he looks straight at me, and I swear, I swear, every person in there turned and looked at me like, "Oh, I know somebody who listens to heavy metal music. It's him. It's Monty. He's the devil." Yeah.
I'm fascinated with Satanic Panic. I think it's so hysterical because it's like the people that are actually like it's so funny for people in Middle America or whatever to I grew up in Indiana, so I'm in the Midwest. It's super conservative. We always went to church. My mom was like, there was so much music that was off the table for me. I mean, pretty much everything. And
unless it sucked. You could listen to music that sucked. Yeah.
Yeah. The worst music available was the only music I could listen to. And my dad didn't really care, but he, acquiesced to my mom. But it's so funny that these people are, everybody's so concerned, and it's like, meanwhile, our government's, bombing every brown person in another country, and it's like, hold on, who's evil here, and that's, that's not something you would realize as a kid, but it is ridiculous. Like, I had a friend, my friend Nicole, one of my best friends from childhood, her older brother worked at MTV in the all through the 90s, and he had, just interviewed Marilyn Manson. And so for my 13th birthday, she got me a Marilyn Manson CD, the Antichrist Superstar, and my mom lost her mind, lost it. Like, Nicole was banned from our house. It was a whole thing. And it's like, I feel like I'm a pretty decent person,
Right. Oh, yeah. I started teaching when I was 15 as an apprentice to my teacher.
Yeah.
And when that came out, then there was a student who loved Marilyn Manson. Mm-hmm. A lot of the kids did.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the parents came to me and goes, "Look, you better not be teaching my kid any Marilyn Manson songs." And I was like, "You don't have to worry about that. I want him to be a good guitar player." Because
a burn she doesn't even understand.
Now, that was before we got John in the band, by the way. So, but you don't need, it's, at that time, I was so into learning, is you want to learn as much music as you can. So when you listen to something like that, it was just like, what the hell is this? Like, it just didn't, it wasn't inspiring musically.
Yeah.
If you take away the imagery, the music isn't something that, was anything to be desired, but, imagine if they looked like Phil Collins, they you wouldn't think like, "Oh yeah, that's so cool,"
Yeah, which is also another funny thing about all that is Charles Manson is thought of as one of the most evil people in American history, rightfully so.
Well, yeah.
And it's also isn't a big part of his story that he allegedly wrote a couple of Beach Boys songs? That's the most bright and cheerful music. And he's actually an evil person.
Yeah, well, he...
allegedly, he wrote them. I don't know.
I think it's the song Never Learn Not to Love.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be kind of fascinated with that. He's got this one song, Look at Your Game Girl. I don't know if you've ever heard that.
No,
but
have not.
That I think it's a, calling it for what it is, really, really cool song.
Oh.
It's like the only one that he has.
All right.
That I have heard. Guns N' Roses even covered that, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's, what I know of what the story was is that he was hanging out with the drummer for the Beach Boys.
Right.
That's sort of common. And I remember watching a documentary on it, and if this is a long time ago, but something like they were writing a song he wrote some stuff with the Beach Boys, and then when he hears it, the producers said the songs are was changed, and then I guess Manson says, "No, that's not the way the song goes," and the producer is like, "No, I'll tell you how the song goes," and that's what sort of flipped him out. But
chaos all through the 60s and 70s when everyone's on fuck. I mean, it's, and this is maybe partially cooked up in my imagination, but I'm like, my perception of it is like everyone's high on mescaline or LSD all the time. Fucking, there's a lot of people that are just, they're not showering regularly. Like, that sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
I
know someone who has since passed away that knew someone that, I'll just say, I'm trying not to, say something without giving away, like, information. Uh-huh. But there was, where I grew up, there were some, there was some horrific, like, murder, kind of, like, crime stuff. And there was one situation that is kind of a famous situation in that area. It was almost like a, like a real Friday the 13th sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
And the guy that did it, the guy who did the murders, he used to make his own acid. And so the friend of his thinks that... this could be a story. This could be, like... I may be saying something that's like people go like, oh, yeah, that's what happened. You didn't know that?
Yeah.
But, like, he would make his own acid. And I guess he made it too strong that night. Cause the person,
I mean, it happens to the best of us, really.
The person that I knew said, you know, I wish I would have hung out with him that night, and that may not have happened.
Or they both would have done it.
Yeah, I would hope not, but well, yeah. I'm trying to be positive here.
I know. You've had, so where did you grow up? Texas?
Longview, Texas.
And then, did you, like, move straight out to L.A., or...
Yeah, I moved to L.A. right at the end of 1999.
Mm-hmm.
It was... I had a band there, and, you know, we were well-known for the area, and, you know, things were going really well for us, and it's one of those situations, like, I wish Brian Slagle could have seen us then.
Yeah.
Like, we could have been one of the biggest bands in the world. And that's something I really believe, too. Like we had it all. We had the combination. We had each of the characters. Had the amazing singer, you know, drummer, bass. Everything just was
great.
And
then what happened?
Well, I visited my cousin who lived in L.A. So I just went to go visit. Well, thing is, I went to a Star Wars convention. And,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's when The Phantom Menace came out.
Okay.
And me and my best friend Charles, I said, you know what? Let's go to Denver. I've never flown on a plane before, and let's go to the Star Wars convention. It's going to be so cool. So we go there, and we're just like, my God, we felt kind of weird there, like maybe it wasn't for us. I did meet the guy that played Darth Vader, though, so that was cool. Yeah, he's a total dick, which, as you would like for Darth, you don't want Darth Vader to be cool.
Yeah.
Like, hey, guys, what's going on? Like, no, you're supposed to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, you know what? Flying is easy. I'm going to fly and see my cousin in L.A. So as soon as I came to L.A. to go visit her, I was like, oh, I'm moving here. Like, and I went back and I told everybody, I'm moving to L.A. And everybody was like, oh, people always move to L.A. L.A. is going to chew you up and spit you out. You'll be back in 6 weeks, you know, with your tail between your legs.
Did you find that more motivating?
I'm always motivated anyway. You probably motivated me anymore. You know, because I was like, okay, I can't go back. No, I didn't really care. I was either like, I'm going to go to Austin or I'm going to go to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
But when I came here, it's like growing up in East Texas, the allergies in the pollen, like I could never breathe. And I felt like when I came to L.A., I could breathe for the first time. Like, I could smell.
Because it's just the smog. It's like not...
No. I mean, just the climate. Yeah, the smog was... I'll take smog over East Texas pollen and humidity any day.
That's saying a lot.
Yes. So I came and I moved here. And so that's how everything kind of started. And I started working at a music store right away.
Uh-huh.
And then this girl that worked in the drum department was dating the original drummer from White Zombie, Ivan. Mm-hmm. And then Ivan was playing, he was jamming with Tommy Victor from Prong. And Prong was one of my favorite bands.
Oh.
If not, Prong was probably my favorite band. And so so they introduced me to Tommy, and then that's how I started playing in Prong. So then I was working at a music store. I lived down in the South Bay in Redondo mm-hmm. Beach because I didn't know any better, and I was driving around, and I said, I like it here. So I got an apartment there, and I was working in Hollywood and then rehearsing with Prong up in Burbank. So
it was
brutal, especially in 2000.
Yeah.
And so people used to come into the music store and ask if there was
any... Oh, yeah, in 2000, you've got a fucking Thomas Guide getting you around.
Oh, yes, huge Thomas Guide. Like a whole stack of paper or a printed out MapQuest.
Just 5 hours in the car with maps, with physical maps.
I wonder if Thomas Guide would be successful if they had a GPS app now. Or if people would just be like, no, we're done.
Yeah, like, no, we're traumatized.
Thank you so much. And so people used to come in looking for guitar teachers, mm-hmm. and we didn't have any guitar teachers. Or you would give someone's card, and the customer would come back and be like, hey, you got anybody else? And so I was like, you know, I should be teaching because that's what I did in Texas. And of all the people, it was Johnny Resnick from the Goo Goo Dolls.
Mm-hmm.
He came in. Both him and Robbie used to come into the store all the time. Everybody came into the store. I helped... My favorite story is I helped David Carradine with some strings one time.
Oh, wow.
And he was barefoot. And I was just what are you doing where you don't have shoes? You know? I helped him with my strings.
Such an LA thing. I'm just like, I'm vibing, man.
But I've heard stories of him on acid walking up and down Laurel Canyon. So, naked. So, at least he had his clothes on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Johnny Resnick was asking me, he said, do you know any guitar teachers? And I was like, why do you need a guitar? Like, you've got you probably had the number one song on the radio at the time.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I just want to, like, always like to learn about new tunings and just, you can always learn something. And I was like, I'll teach you. That's what I do. And he's like, oh, you're a teacher? I'm like, yeah. So he goes, oh, call my manager and set up lessons with me. So I call his manager.
At this point, were you already teaching here? Or were you just talking out of your ass? That's amazing.
Yes. But I knew that I could teach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I called his manager and said, hey, you know, Johnny gave me this number and he wants guitar lessons. The guy's like, yeah, right. And like hung up on me probably.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, maybe a month later, Johnny comes in again. He's like, hey, man, I never heard from you. Are you not teaching? I was like, I called your manager and he acted like I was some crazy fan. He goes, oh, just call him again. So I called him again. Same thing. So I was like, that's all right. But
my client does not want guitar lessons.
I'm like, you guys make up your mind. You want to learn something or not? And I hated selling guitars. So that's what made me say, okay, you know what? I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to start teaching. So that's what I did. And then I get a call from this guy saying, hey, I need guitar lessons for my boss.
Oh, yes. This is like... this is the story I heard from Vince, who's, for anyone listening, is a mutual friend of ours. And I didn't know what the specifics were. But I guess I was going to ask you if there was like something that seemed insignificant at the time that, you know, changed the course of things for you. And
That's definitely it.
Yeah.
So it was, I go to this house, and it was to teach Guy Ritchie, the filmmaker who had only put out one movie at the time. I didn't know who he was. This was before Snatch. And I drive up to the parking lot and I see into the driveway and there's Madonna.
So the guy that is, want to get those. You're like, end of story. When the guy was like, hey, my boss wants guitar lessons, did they say who it was or were they just like, yeah, my boss, just a regular person?
He may have said Guy Ritchie, have you heard of him? And I said no.
Yeah.
Or something. Like, I figured he was like a business contractor, like somebody who made buildings or something.
Yeah.
Did construction, the way he said it.
And, oh, that's funny.
And, so that's how, and then he was dating Madonna, so that's how I met Madonna. So I was teaching him, and that's how she and I became friends.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started, you know, then eventually he got her a guitar for her birthday and got her some lessons for her birthday, which... you know, I figured she'll take one lesson or something.
Right. Because you're like, she's already got a lot going on. It's not like...
Yeah, like, you know, you don't say, you know, you learn to play like this, you'll sell a million albums one day. And so so I started teaching her, and then she just was so into it, and I was going to her house like, it seemed like almost every day and teaching her. And then a month after that, she was going to go on Letterman, and she didn't know for you know. She said, "I may perform. I don't know, but basically, it was like then it was like, okay, yeah, you want to come play with me on Letterman?" And it was just like a few days from then, then it was like a rabbit in the headlights, and then I played with her on Letterman, and that's where all of that began. That's 20 years ago.
That's incredible. So with the first time, I mean, that was your first time on TV playing, right?
First time playing on TV, yeah.
Did your former church tune in for that, or?
I don't know. There was some, my mom works at the church still. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, and I don't take offense to this.
Of
I don't
course.
Look at them
of
as
course.
Like, how could you say something so rude? You just kind of laugh it off. But
yeah.
I remember when she said something to somebody like, wait, well, my son's, he's playing for Madonna now. And they go, Madonna? Couldn't he find some better people to hang out with there? Like,
which is like, that's the best one.
Yeah.
You did it. You hit the fucking jackpot.
Aren't there some better people like Donald Trump out there that he can hang out with?
It's also like,
some more Christian people.
She's one of the most successful artists in the history of the world.
I know.
You know, and
you know what when mm-hmm. that clicked in, you know, when that clicked for me when I was when there was that like, oh my God, I'm playing guitar for Madonna. You know what it was? We were all at a party and Harrison Ford was like flirting with her.
Uh-huh. And then you just watching it, you were like, "Hold on."
I'm just like, I was like, "So Harrison Ford's flirting with you." Yeah, this is after she was divorced.
Yeah.
And I was like, why don't you go talk to him, you know? She's like, you're just saying that because he's in Star Wars. And I'm like, well, yeah, he's also in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
He's like, also he's Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
I would be Harrison Ford.
If I could have made that match, you know how cool that would have been? Like,
yeah.
you show up at the house for guitar lessons and, oh hey, Harrison, what's going on?
I'm sure by then you'd be like, Harry.
Yeah. Or you remember, it would that? Be, yeah. Remember that time Boba Fett put you in carbon freeze? Oh, man, I haven't been this cold since I was in Cloud City. You know what that's like, right? Ha, ha, ha.
You guys just all have Thanksgiving dinner together.
Yeah. He would just be like, no, please don't ask another question.
Please leave me alone. Please. That is, that's so funny. And, I mean, how cool that you've been playing with her for so long. You taught her, which is also like, it's just like a testament to her talent that she was like, and her dedication to her craft, that she was like, no, I want to learn to actually play. I'm not just going to like sing and fuck off. Because I think a lot of pop stars don't really care. They're like, I don't need to do all that stuff.
Yeah, no, she is a real, I mean, one of the most amazing, I've been fortunate to know and work with a lot of amazing musicians, but, you know, for her to be able to just, she touches everything. She has her hand in everything. You don't just show up and play and that's it. She wants to go through every guitar sound. All right, let me hear that compared to these other amps.
Yeah.
Let me, is that the right guitar? Maybe use this other guitar. What kind of, just every little detail that you can think of. She pays attention to every little detail.
Yeah, that's so incredible.
And that's one of the many reasons she has done what she's done.
Yeah. I had heard at one point, I think it was some interview or something, that somebody was saying like, oh, if she has like a trainer, like a personal trainer, say, and they were like, you need to do this 1,000 times a day, she's like, all right, done.
Yeah,
I'll do it.
And when she first started with me, her assistant would say, like, no, if you think about all the things she has to do in a day, she doesn't go to sleep until she's played through her scales or chords or a song that I gave her or something like that.
Wow, that's awesome. And that must be so satisfying as a teacher also.
It is, yeah. It's something you don't notice while you're doing it, but like now, like when you're talking about it, you know, like that you look back on. That's And getting to clap on an album. That is the...
Yeah.
You know, imagine if that would have...
professional clapper.
Imagine if that would have won a Grammy. And you know, what if I had a Grammy for, you know, the clapper of the year?
It would be so funny if there was, like, an extra Grammy category that's just, like, body sounds.
Yeah,
you know?
Or if there was a music, if there was a music book, like a transcription book, like you have the score, that's just, you know...
Yeah, just clapping, and they're like, and they have like a diagram of like, you know, hit your fingers into the palm or something.
I could do some YouTube lessons for that. I should add that to my, because, you know, from guitar lessons.
Well, there you go.
I do. I teach guitar lessons, bass lessons, vocal lessons, ukulele lessons, and I could add that to it.
And now
clapping.
That's so awesome. If your child self, like 11-year-old Monty, could meet you now, like, what do you think he would think?
I think he would be happy with everything. Because sometimes you veer off course, but you learn something from that. And it's funny that you ask that, because I just got all my old VHS tapes, and I got a VCR and a converter, so I can like take all this stuff and digitize all this stuff. So I'm going back and watching myself play shows at 15 years old and 19 years old, and I'm it's like that kid is teaching me something.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh wow, this is how I used to look at it, and it's when I didn't know what is that's the bad part of what can happen when you learn a lot of how something works. I prefer it to be, you know, prefer it now that, you know, I know the music theory side more, but when I didn't really understand that, and I'm just figuring it out on guitar, I was more creative in a certain way.
Yeah.
And it evolves, but I think he would be very, very proud of it.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you think
he'd be surprised?
Yeah, although, you know, I had a dream when I was 14 that I played guitar next to Madonna.
You're not serious.
I'm dead serious.
Hold on. I have to hear about this dream. This is crazy.
All I remember is it was in a theater, and I was to her left, sitting down, playing a nylon string guitar.
What? Okay, so I'm assuming...
it's not like it's not like I dreamed it. Like, oh, one day I want to play with it. It's nothing. Yeah. My dream would be like playing guitar for Ozzy, or if Metallica added a third guitar like Lynyrd Skynyrd, or Led Zeppelin got back together and said, hey, you know what? Why don't we have two guitars?
why don't we have this other guy?
That would have been, you know, the dream sort of thing. But I'm just saying, I had a dream.
An actual dream. That's
that
really
I was
wild.
Playing with her, and that was 10 years before I actually met her.
What? Were you like a big Madonna fan when you were growing up, or
no?
That's so wild. I mean, I'm assuming you've told her this story.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm sure I did. I don't know. It's something I didn't really thought of.
Yeah.
Someone asked me, it was after I had been playing with her. Someone was doing like a story on people that dream about her or something, and I was like, wait, you know, it just reminded me, like, I remember having that dream and just telling somebody, well, I had this dream, I was playing guitar for Madonna. So that was when I was 14, because I really liked, there's a singer, Lorena McKinnitt.
Okay.
She's a Canadian, she's from Canada, I think, and it's like new age kind of music. Mm-hmm. And I used to work in a record store in Texas and always play her album, The Mask in the Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a phone number in the album, and I was like, oh, this would be, I'd love to have a gig like this.
Yeah.
Like if I could, like, from, like, if Sade ever had a, needed a guitar player and went on tour, I would, that's a gig, that would be, like, one of the main gigs I'd love to do. Like, because that's something I haven't done, you know, but it's something, you know, there's something, you know, different. I like doing different things. And so I called the number. And it was like, I don't know if it was her voicemail, I don't know if it was her or whatever, but I got nervous and hung up. But that's the only time I would have thought, like, somebody I would like to play with. So I wouldn't have even thought, like, I want to play with Madonna. But
yeah.
I didn't
you should have called and been like, hey, I heard your client wants guitar lessons.
Oh, I know. I should do that with everybody. Yeah.
With everyone.
But how do you? I still don't know how to find them. When Brian signed me to Metal Blade, he's like, "How come you've never sent something to a label before with your other stuff?" I'm like, "How? Like, I don't know how to do that."
Yeah, it's not like there's a yellow book or something or yellow pages where it's like, here's all your heroes. And there, you know, I do have somewhere in my apartment, I have this ridiculous book I had when I was a kid that's like, send letters to your favorite stars. And it's like all of their addresses, you know, but it's really their management or whatever. I'm like, what a sad little book that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's so funny. So what do you think, how do you think things are going to go for the next handful of years for you?
Well, I mean, I'll keep teaching, mm-hmm. that's for sure, and I want to work on another album, and I'm just going to take my time with that.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that yet. I don't know whether, like, you know, go in and record one song,
mm-hmm.
and then record another song, and record, and then, like, kind of do it like
just
that.
Piece by piece.
Yeah, because I want to have, like, I don't want to do it all. I want to have what I bring to the table, and then mm-hmm. who plays on the album, what we play it together, and then give it to the producer and say, like, okay, now you're in charge. And they go, oh, all right, you got to cut this part, or you should do this part twice as long, and I don't like this part. You should throw in another part here. I want, like, I'm going to do my part, and then just, like, let you have to let it go and sort of be directed. As far as where music is going to go, I get asked that, and every time I give an answer, I feel like I'm completely wrong about it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. It's a new decade, so every decade music changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I always say, like, people asked me last year, like, are you working on a new album? And I said, no, not really. Because I don't know where everything is going to go. Not that I'm going to make music that's about a certain time anyway.
Yeah.
But, like, if you look at 1979 and 1980, it was two different genres. If you look at 1989 and 1990, it's two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time for everything to change. Everybody is at home, quarantined, so I could see, like, the homemade sort of aspect being there. Like, you know, the sort of home recording sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, because I think that maybe everybody's doing that, so maybe it would be the opposite.
Yeah.
Like, if you go out into a restaurant in L.A., if you don't have reservations, you can't get in.
Right.
What you would think, like, with everything being shut down and, you know, like, businesses going out of, you know, people going out of business and stuff like that, that restaurants would shut down. You can't even go to, like, you can't go to the Yard House downtown near the Staples Center. I was going to go there last night. And I'm like, hey, how long's the wait? They go, oh, it's at least an hour. I'm like, an hour to get to the Yard House? Like,
you're like, do you know who I am?
No.
I'm just professional?
No, I'm just, yeah, I know. You take that. But it's just to get into a place like that, you know, is, I mean, Yard House is great. I was going to go there at, you know, 10 o'clock at night, but, and it was one of the only things open. So every time I think that something's going to happen, you have to also look at what the flip side would be.
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, like, I got asked this earlier in the year, and I was like, well, look at, like, Post Malone and Ozzy, like, mm-hmm. maybe something like that, but I don't mm-hmm. think that anymore. Now I think, like, okay, it would not be that.
It is really interesting, I think, to see how people are getting creative work done remotely, because people are, you know, creative people are going to keep reinventing things, and they're going to keep pushing ahead regardless. And I think I kind of like hearing things now that are recorded, whether it be a podcast or whatever, that are recorded in quarantine, because the sound isn't, like, super, super polished, and it kind of, it feels, no, but I like it because I'm like, you connect to it a little bit more if it doesn't sound like it's a radio thing.
Right. Well, okay. You know? I was going to mention that too. Like, some mm-hmm. of the albums that have come out this year, like Testament's new album, Lamb of God's mm-hmm. new album, like those bands, I feel like it's so good. Where do you go from there? Like, what is going to ever, like, I was joking, you know, I'm friends with some of them, and I was just joking around, like, I feel like anything I do from here on out just sounds stupid next to these albums, you know? Alex Golnick goes, oh, there's plenty for all of us.
Yeah.
There's plenty of riffs left over out there. But yeah, that's another thing. When something gets so good, where does it go from there?
Yeah.
So maybe it, you know, then I think about what I do, like for my stuff, maybe I can sort of expand or condense, like having a variety of stuff.
Yeah.
I can go back to that Led Zeppelin template. You know, I'll do a really heavy song, and then an acoustic song, and then a blues song, and then like a trippy kind of song.
Yeah, I love that.
But then I've got some of the heavy stuff I have. I've got like a whole album's worth. So I don't know. I don't know how I'm gonna do it all. But I don't know where music is gonna go. I'm bored personally with just about everything that's out there. Except for everybody on Metal Blade Records, of course.
Yeah.
But besides that, during
that time, you can always like kind of kick back and teach for a while, and then come back to it later. You know, if you're feeling bored or burnt out.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? Is everything going to get shut down again, or are people going to say, "Look, that's not working. You know, we're going to have to work around it. We just don't know, and then we'll take it from there."
Yeah.
But it's time for something different and exciting. But what hasn't been done?
Yeah.
Musically, I will say this: that's interesting is when I first started teaching online. Once I got off tour, like in April, a lot of the people weren't asking for heavy songs. No one wanted to learn anything heavy because everything was so dark as it was. Life was heavy enough. But what a lot of people asked for was like late 90s one-hit wonders.
Like, oh, that's really funny.
Matchbox 20 and Third Eye Blind. And so then I'm listening to, I won't say the songs are easy. I mean, they are, but it's simple. Mm-hmm. But there's something that's really well done about that simplicity.
Yeah.
And then, of course, so I'm listening to those songs a lot. And then I find myself just listening to it. And then you think, like, that was the last time of a happy time.
Yeah.
That was before Y2K, before September 11th, before going to war, the housing market crisis, all of the times we live in now. So
I think we're due for some happy times. We really are due.
So it was like the sort of like happy kind of music was a thing. That and sort of some acoustic guys that are like it would be, it's not country, but it's not, but or it is country, but then if you don't like country, you'd still like it. Like Nathaniel Ratliff is this guy, or Chris, Chris Stapleton, that sort of thing. Like that everybody still kind of likes, even if though you don't normally like that kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
So like that sort of simplistic, just playing chords on nothing crazy on the guitar. So
which is like whatever hits with you emotionally is the best thing for you. It doesn't for each person.
So I don't know where it's gonna go, but I'm just gonna. I mean that's. I'm just gonna do my, just do what I come up with. But then, going back to Van Halen, they changed they didn't change. They evolved with the time.
Yeah.
I won't say changed.
Yeah.
They just
That's awesome.
You keep elaborating on what you do with what you have.
Yeah, maybe add some claps at some point.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll do a live album and a double album of just claps.
Yes, just
you
like
can do a,
vaguely
you can do a guess.
Spanish clapping. Amazing.
Yeah,
I can't wait. I would love to make my clapping debut.
Can you snap?
I can snap. Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, we could do it.
Great.
We have a
snaps, claps, I got you.
Pittman and Curry.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Curry and Pittman if you want. Curry and Pittman.
We can put your name first. I'll allow it.
Okay.
Thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you and take lessons from you?
To find me for guitar lessons, it's lessons@montypittman.com, which you can find from my website, montypittman.com, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, it's all @MontyPittman. But if you email me there, I'll email you back all the different lesson packages and stuff like that. So
awesome.
That, I mean, that hopefully I'm not too hard to find.
Yeah.
But everything is just my name. Like if you go to YouTube and type in Monty Pittman, I'm sure it'll pop up. Or if you go to, you know, I'm on Instagram. I just had an imposter I had to get rid of.
Oh, oof.
That's,
oof.
I've been having things like that happen. I don't know why, but someone made a duplicate of my Instagram page and was writing people, acting like it, acting like it was me.
And they're like, hey, your client wants some guitar.
And they're like, where are you right now? It's like, oh, I'm here in Texas. Thank you for showering me with your love. And they're like, are you okay? That doesn't sound like anything you would say. So, so.
That's hilarious.
At Monty Pittman, MONTEPITTMAN. And if you like Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon, anywhere you listen to music, you can find, I've got 6 albums. Albums out.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Everybody listening, get yourself some guitar lessons, download one of Monty's albums, for God's sake.
I'll teach you how to play, and then I'll play you some songs, and... Yeah, and then whatever, I don't know, whatever else comes my way. You never know. You never know what's coming.
Who knows? All right, well, thank you.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right.
Bye. Once again, that was Monty Pittman. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Monty Pittman. I'm Lisa Curry. You can find me on Twitter at Lisa_Curry and on Instagram at Olympian Lisa Curry. Thank you so much for listening.